Welcome. Today is the 7th of August, 2012. And this is Tuesday. On Friday, we celebrate Krishna's appearance day when he came to the planet some 5,000 years ago. And I thought I would do a bit of a slide presentation for you today, which I rarely do, but I already had a small slideshow, and I just extended it a little bit for you. So as we go through it, you'll have something to look at, something very attractive, Krishna. The all-attractive person, Krishna means? All attractive. Krish means to draw, to pull, to attract. That's the root, the verbal root, Krish. And he's called the most attractive personality. 5,000 years ago, the earth was burdened with too much military might. Now, if that sounds like a deja vu, well, this happens from time to time on the earth. And sometimes when there's too much military might, it has to be reduced. It says in the Bhagavad Gita, Yada yada hidharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyuttanam adharmasya. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in dharma, virtue, or morality, or spiritual principle, at that time I descend myself. That's what God says. That's what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. That's when Krishna comes himself, when there is too much of a decline in dharma, in virtue. So we have this near the close of the last yuga. The last yuga or age was the Bronze Age, Dvapara Yuga. So that's when Krishna appeared some 5,000 years ago. And when he left, that ended the Bronze Age, and the Kali Yuga, the Iron Age, began, in which we find ourselves. So here is a depiction of the spiritual world at the very top. In the middle frame is Vishnu lying on Shesha. Vishnu is another name for God, as we've talked about. That's Vishnu up on the altar on the far, next to the far right. Lakshmi Narayan. So Vishnu's got the four arms and carrying the four things. We'll talk about that in a moment. And Vishnu lies at the bottom of the universe on the causal ocean, each universe. The causal ocean, or on the Garbhadak ocean, I should say. And it's explained in the Vedas that each universe, which more or less resembles an egg or a sphere, bottom half is filled with water, and it's almost like the amniotic fluid, same concept. So Vishnu lies there, and from his navel sprouts a lotus, as you see it there, and Brahma appears, four-headed Brahma, who's the creator of all the diversity within the universe. That is Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, sitting next to him. So when the gods, the celestials, the higher beings in the universe, those in charge of universal affairs, need something done, and they want to appeal to God, they go to either there's an ocean of milk, or there's the Garbhadak ocean, and they offer prayers to Vishnu. hoping that he'll appear and grant their request, which is we need somebody to come down. We need an avatar to sort things out. So this is what they did. In the bottom frame is Krishna actually taking birth to his with his parents, Devaki and Vasudev. Devaki, his mother, and Vasudev, his father. And the bottom personality, the dark bluish, is Vyasadev, who is the literary incarnation of God. Vyasadev compiled the Vedas and all the knowledge associated with the Vedas. So that's Vyas. And Vyas also was somebody who was one of the key figures in bringing down the incarnation of Krishna.
Sage Vyas.
Sage Vyas. There is another depiction of Vishnu lying on the Anantashesha, the serpent couch. And Ananta means unlimited. Those heads that, of course, are limited there are unlimited. And Anantashesha is in charge of gravitational force in the universe through his various energies. Sometimes they say he supports the planets upon his hoods. I don't know if he does that physically. Certainly we would not be able to see it, but he certainly does it energetically. And that is Brahma at the top in the center of the picture of the creator. These proportions are way off, let us just say, because they're trying to get everybody in the picture here. Some of my god brothers and god sisters did the sculpture for all of this. This is in Los Angeles. And when Brahma awakened on the lotus and became aware of himself, he couldn't see anything. All there was all around him was blackness. So, and if he looked underneath the lotus, he did not see Vishnu underneath. He saw nothing. So to know himself, he heard two syllables. He heard Tapa. And what does Tapa mean?
Meditation.
Tapa actually means austerity or sacrifice or penance. Undertake some tapa. Some tapas. So he understood this from within his heart to mean he must meditate within himself and all will be revealed. Well, that's what he did for about 1,000 years. And all was revealed from within the heart. And then he became conscious of himself and his role. He, Brahma, did not know what he was supposed to do. What am I supposed to do here? What is my role? What is my purpose? Have we ever heard that one before? Mm-hmm. All day long, every day, I hear that. And so do you. If not all day long, you hear it regularly. And you've all thought it at one point in your life or at several junctures in your life. What shall I do when I grow up? What shall I do when I become realized, in Brahma's case? Oh, I'm supposed to create all the diversity within in the universe. Now, scientists, modern day scientists, would strongly disagree with this notion of creation. So I invite them to create themselves one of those bionic spheres that they like to make and set off an explosion within it. You got to have a big bang or nothing's going to happen. And then just watch all the pieces settle and an ecosphere immediately presents itself. Because that's the theory. I'll go with the Brahma myself. I'll go with the Vedic version. Over on the right are the different gods praying, please send someone to help us out. Okay? This is a depiction of the spiritual world. or the spiritual sky. The golden light is the spiritual sky. And the spiritual sky is said to be roughly three-quarters of the entire manifestation of everything. We could say the spiritual creation, but the spiritual creation is never created. It just is. And the material creation is roughly one-quarter of the total manifestation, according to the Vedas. So you see the huge 1,000-petal lotus and Krishna running around there doing his pastimes in the middle. That's the spiritual world, or Goloka Vrindavan, where Krishna carries out his various lila or lilas, pastimes, divine pastimes. Now, each one of those orange spheres with a manifestation of Vishnu within it are the various spiritual planets. How many are there? Who can count? So you can go to spiritual planets. Now, most people, when they think of realization and God realization and reaching that level of spiritual understanding, as we've discussed on more than one occasion, they merge into the energy. I'm God, you are God, we are all God, we are all of the same divine energy, Holy Spirit, Holy Ghost. And there is the energy depicted in the beams of light. That is the divine energy. It is also called Brahma, which means spirit. It pervades everything. It pervades everything in the material world as well. It is the antimatter principle. So there it is. And if you cannot reach one of the planets, you could reach the spiritual sky. And it's to be understood that the light or the energy in the spiritual sky, the Brahman is another name for it, is millions and billions of living entities. That's what it constitutes. That's what constitutes it. Now, down on the right corner is the material world. That huge bubble. The material world may not be a nice egg like that. I'm not sure about that part, but you can see all the manifestations of all the different... Those there are not planets, they are universes in that egg. So that is the material world. Here is another depiction of the same subject. Down on the right is the material world with all the various universes. Vishnu lying down in mystic sleep creates the multifarious universes and the worlds. There are three levels of Vishnu. There's Karanadakshaya Vishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and Kshiradakshaya Vishnu. So you have the huge space of the material creation, or the empty void at that point. Vishnu lies down, and out of his pores come the universes, just like perspiration out of his pores. First he goes into mystic sleep, and he dreams the creation. Do you not dream your creation? Do you not dream what you want, and then it happens? Isn't that how it works? You don't necessarily have to be sleeping, but this isn't sleeping, it's yoga nidra, mystic sleep. So he goes into meditation to meditate the creation into being. And for Vishnu, the whole creation as we live it is his one single exhalation. That's us. That's us going back in as he inhales. One breath. Can you imagine the proportion, the level on which this is taking place? It's the entire creation, which goes on for millions of years, is one of his exhalations. Now you can go meditate on that for about 10 years, come back and tell me what you think. So he's in mystic sleep. The universe has come out of his pores, and entering into each of the universes is the Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, and it's from his navel that Brahma appears in each of the universes. Okay? And then there's a Kshiradakshayi Vishnu who sits in the ocean, or lies in the ocean of milk. And he serves as the Paramatma feature in the universe. He enters into the hearts of all beings. That's his job, including the blade of grass. I looked it up because we talked about it last time, including the blade of grass. So here's another depiction of Vishnu. Vishnu always appears in a four-armed form. Vishnu means he who pervades everything. So Vishnu is God. In anybody's parlance, it's God. In Christianity, they have no knowledge of God. What he looks like, where he lives, what he likes to do, what he wears, what he likes to eat, who he hangs with. No information at all. In fact, they don't even know his name. Never mind where he lives. So, what are the four items that we find in Vishnu's hands? Shankha Chakra Gada Padma. Shankha is the conch shell, upper, from our point of view, upper right. Chakra is upper left. That is used as a weapon. Conch shell is used to when he blows the conch, you can blow it. Want to blow the conch for us, Kalind? It strikes fear in the hearts of the non-devotees, of the atheists. And it inspires the devotees, the theists. Then on the right hand, lower right, his lower right hand is the lotus flower, which is kind of the symbol for spirituality and beauty and love. And the lower left is the club. Bring it to your senses. So that's a depiction of Vishnu. There's another one, kind of standing on the ocean. There's, you can see the Shesha, the serpent behind him. The serpent energy is not a negative serpent energy. It's very positive. It's kind of like the Kundalini energy. You know, when... Sheshanaga. It's Naga, but it's not... See, Nagas are, actually live in the... in the lower realms, typically. But this is a Naga who has qualified himself to hang out with God. So he's not your average Naga. And when the Kundalini goes up the spine through the chakras, then he reaches the topmost chakra, seventh chakra. And there you have... Right? Same idea. So, oh, that's a very nice one. I really like that picture. Here's another one. This is actually a deity. This is the deity of Vishnu that Krishna owned and worshipped when he was on the planet 5,000 years ago. This deity is called Guru Vayur. Two gods came down, Brihaspati, the chief priest of the devas, of the gods, and Vayu, the wind god. And they brought this deity. A deity is a murti or a form like these forms we have here. These are deities that can be made out of pretty much any material like wood or marble or metal. Those ones in the middle are made out of porcelain, very rare. They use porcelain, but we have none of those. So those two demigods came down and gave Krishna a gift of this deity. And it is still here on earth, and it is in Kerala in a temple, and the place is called Guruvayur. Well, I tell you, my friends, I had to go there, and I went there. And do you think they'd let me in? No, they wouldn't. So I did not get in to see. I was crestfallen when they wouldn't let me in.
Why were you not here?
Because I'm non-Hindu. The guy says, and I said, no, I'm Hindu, I'm Vaishnava, you know. I'm a follower now for 40 years. He says, bring your passport. So I had to go back to my hotel, get my passport. So I come back, I hand the guy my passport. I don't know why does he need to see my passport? He looks at my passport, Drew Joseph Lawrence. There, Joseph, you're a Christian. You can't come in. I was livid. I just stared a hole through the sky with fire. And if he gets into a temple in his next life, I'll be very surprised. If he gets anywhere near a temple in his next life. Anyway, I didn't get it.
You got a picture.
I'm just going to try again.
No, you can't get it.
A different name, though.
Certain places you can't. You just can't go. Sometimes they tell you no, and you just hang around outside the door long enough, and they let you in. But some places are very strict. This is one of those, you know. This is a deity form of Radha and Krishna. She's made of white marble, and he's made of black marble. And this is on an altar and is being currently worshipped. And, of course, they have a cow there with them. And this beautiful deity is called Radha Govinda. Why does God manifest in the form of a deity? Anybody? Because you can't see God. I mean, you can if you could. If you were qualified, you could see God, but you can't. So God will take the form of a deity so you can render service. By serving the deity, you are serving God. And we are very much people who need an object to focus on. So you don't need a deity. You can think about God, but this locks it in for you. It allows you to focus in on a form and a figure.
The deity exists in a deity realm.
Sorry?
The deity exists in a deity realm. Or the God realm.
Yes, the deity is God. It is not to be thought that this is a chunk of marble. And I can tell you many... We've talked many...
Tell them the story with the German photographer.
Australian. He's an Aussie. It was in Melbourne. They had deities like this in the Melbourne temple. And there was a devotee there who, an Australian guy. And his best friend was a very famous, successful photographer. Shot many big commercial shoots for big companies and big shoots. I mean, famous photos, you know, famous campaigns, that sort of thing. So he said the devotee who lived at the temple said to his friend, the photographer, would you come and take photographs of our deity? Because he had an old, I can't remember the name of that, square box camera.
Hasselblad.
Yeah, he had an old Hasselblad, you know. Yeah, yeah, exactly. German. That's what you're thinking, German.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, no, I don't know. You wouldn't go under the... Yeah, square foot. Yeah. So he had a Hasselblad. So he kept referring, he was, you know, on the, in the room photographing the deity on the altar like you're seeing him here. And he kept referring to the deity as that. What are you going to, you want to change that one's dress or you want to move it around? And he kept saying it and that. So the devotee and his wife, and she was on the altar arranging things, they went privately and said to each other, "What?" She says, "Why does he keep calling it and that? That's not very nice." You know, he's making an offense. And the other, and her husband said, "He doesn't know. He's here taking nice photos. You know, don't worry about it so much." So those two are having this conversation outside of the temple room, in the hall, right? In the meantime, the photographer's busy doing something, then he looks up, and she has turned the deity. Radha has turned sideways. And he looks... And he's seen if the guy's wife is still on the altar. Did she turn the deity? Mm-hmm. You can't turn these things. These things. Radha is very, very heavy. They're very heavy. They're marble. So he goes out, the photographer, into the hall. And there's the two of them standing. He says, "Well, you weren't on the altar just now?" "No, no, we've been out here speaking." "Oh, yeah. Well, did you turn her? Did you turn her?" "No." "Then you better come in here." So they go in, and they look, and Radha's turned herself to the side to show this guy that it's not inanimate matter. There's many, many, many stories like this. The more you serve God, the more God will reciprocate with you in the deity form. Because God can do whatever God wants to do.
So is a story of in Vrindavan that some guy chased a boy and a girl, two young children, out of an orchard or something. They were stealing fruit or
they were stealing
oranges or something.
Fruit in the guy's orchard.
And as they were being chased off, a piece of cloth got caught on a wall or a branch or something and ripped off.
A little tiny piece of cloth. The
kids ran away anyway.
And the kids ran away. It was the kids' clothing.
Yeah. And the next morning when they opened the deity, that exact piece of cloth was missing from their clothes.
I mean, there's countless stories like this. This beautiful deity is in Inishrat in Fermanagh, County Fermanagh, at the Krishna temple on the island.
That's the Hare Krishna statue.
Yeah. Now this is a manifestation called Shad Bhuja, a six arm form of Vishnu. Shad means six and Bhuja means arms. You can see the Krishna form of blue in the center, holding the flute. The two arms in green above, this is actually carved a lot of times too in deity form. The two arms in green holding a bow and an arrow, who do they belong to?
Ram.
Ramachandra. Another incarnation. And then the two arms in gold carrying a stick and a water pot belong to whom?
Shankar.
No, Chaitanya.
Chaitanya.
Yeah, which is, that's Chaitanya there on the far left in the gold, second to the end. So those, that shows you three incarnations of Vishnu in one. That's the concept there. Now, I guess I didn't tell you the story yet. So, Vishnu agreed to appear. Now, when Vishnu agrees to appear, he doesn't tell you all the details of his appearance. He doesn't tell you whose family necessarily he'll be born into or what he's going to look like. Or he just says he's going to appear. So you wait to find out if he's going to appear. So he... What happened was, Devaki, who would be his mother, on her wedding day was marrying Vasudev. They are of the kingly or princely caste or part of society. And
the royal family.
Yeah. And so they were Kshatriyas or warriors or governmental figures. They were kings and queens. This is where they came from. And her brother, Kamsa, who was a very dark character, but this was an occasion for joy. One of the things that you would do is the older brother would drive the chariot home to their house from the wedding ceremony. So Kamsa was driving their chariot, Devaki and Vasudeva were on the chariot, and all of a sudden there was a Shuriravak, a disembodied voice from the sky, spoke and said, "Kamsa, you fool. Do you not know that the eighth child, the eighth son of your sister, will be the cause of your death?" That's what it said. Well, Kamsa was fearful and furious, and he immediately drew his sword. He was going to cut off his sister's head. So we're not even going to get to child number eight. We're not going to get to child number one. Never mind number eight. So Vasudev had to intercede on her behalf and talk Kamsa out of killing his newly married wife, Kamsa's own sister. So he did that. He says, look, we'll give you the eighth child that we have. Don't worry, we'll give him to you. Kamsa says, no. You'll give them all to me. And he says, okay, we'll give them all to you. Please don't kill her. Well, what are you going to say at a moment like that? You're going to say anything just so she doesn't get killed. So Kamsa was demoniac by nature. He was manipulative, conniving. And what he did was he took Devaki and Vasudev and locked them into prison. He had already usurped his father's throne and had unlawfully taken the throne, which among kings and queens, this is kind of old news. They do that, historically speaking. So he was unlawfully holding the throne, and he was in charge of the kingdom. So he threw Devaki, his sister, and her husband into prison and would not let them out until after the eighth child was born and dispensed with. That was his plan. So the first child came along. There was news because the guards are there outside the cell. And Kamsa went and he heard that the child had been born. It was a boy. And he went in and Devaki says, "Please don't do anything to him. This is not the eighth child. This is the first child." And Kamsa thought to himself, well, you can't be too careful. So he took the child, he said, let me see that child. And he dashed the child against the stone floor or stone wall and killed it immediately. And this he did 7 times in a row. For the first 7 children, they were all male. The 8th child was predicted to be the one that would kill. So, then when she was about to deliver the 8th child, Vishnu actually appeared in the room. We've talked about this before. There are, 5 ways or 6 ways to impregnate? There's the way we know, through intercourse. It can be done through breath. It can be done through word. It can be done through thought. And again, there's a couple others. It can be done through touch.
Test tube.
It can be done through test tube. That's a new one, Mark and Dan. That's not the one in the Vedas. Same idea. Immaculate conception. So Devaki was also immaculate conception. So before the baby came out of the womb, baby was being carried in the womb, Vishnu appeared in the cell, as you see him here, and said, peace be to you. Don't be afraid. Everything's fine. It's under control. I want you to know who I am. I'm your child. You prayed for me in a past life that God himself would take birth as your child. Here I am. Unfortunately, you don't get to keep me because of the circumstance we're in. So he said, in a moment, I'm going to resume my baby form, as I'm supposed to be. And then we will cast a spell over the kingdom, and everybody will fall asleep. At that time, the prison door will open, and Vasudeva, you must take me, the child, across the river, the Yamuna River, over to Nandagram, and place me in the arms of Yashoda, the wife of Nanda, and I will be their newborn baby. They are having a baby at the same time. Their baby is Yogamaya. And you will swap children. You will take their girl and bring her back, and you will leave me there. So I will not be killed by Kamsa. So he assumed his baby form again, and Devaki is holding him. And this spell falls over everybody. The prison door opens, and Vasudeva takes him, and a huge torrential storm begins to come down. And Sheshanaga appears as an umbrella, because they've got some distance to go. This painting does not depict what actually happens, because the waters of the Yamuna are very violent and disturbed with the storm. The waters part, and he walks across with the child unharmed. And he places the child in the arms of the sleeping Yashoda and takes her baby, who is Yogamaya. Yogamaya means the internal potency of God. Like Durga, Durga is Mahamaya, the external energy of God, material energy. Yogamaya is the internal energy, the spiritual energy. So, and he takes Yogamaya back, and he returns to the cell. The cell door closes. He gives the baby to his wife, Devaki. People wake up the next morning. Krishna was born at when? midnight. Ring any bells?
Well, yeah.
Parting of the waters, does that ring any bells? Wonder which came first. So then Kamsa hears that the child, eighth child of Devaki, has been born. He rushes over. He's trembling in fear. And he goes into the prison cell with every intent of killing the child. And Devaki pleads to him, says, my lord, this is a girl. The prediction was the eighth child, eighth boy born to me. This is the eighth child, a girl. You don't want to kill her. That's not the prediction. He says, yeah, boy, girl, what do I care? And he's ready to smash the baby against the stone. And Yoga Maya appears. The baby takes an adult form as the goddess, and she hovers in midair. And again, we hear, Kamsa, you fool. The eighth child of Devaki has already escaped your grasp, and your days are numbered, my friend, and there's nothing you can do now. So release these innocent people from prison, and maybe then some mercy will be shown to you. Well, he starts feeling, you know, a little guilty, probably more sorry for himself than anything else. And he orders, he couldn't kill Yoga Maya, but she disappears. And he releases them from prison. For a while. Then he changes his mind. So, Yashoda wakes up. It was apparently a tough labor. She doesn't quite recall through Yoga Maya, through the mystic potency, whether she had a boy or a girl. She just remembers giving birth. And alas, a beautiful boy. And that's Krishna. And that's Yashoda. Now it's interesting, Yashoda was not Krishna's mother. She was Krishna's foster mother, as was her husband, Nanda. But they got to spend the first 14 years, 12 or 14 years with Krishna. And they got to raise him and enjoy. So this is yet another example. If you want God to take birth as your child, it is entirely possible. It can be done. There are many examples of it. This is just two couples, Devaki Vasudev, Nanda Yashoda. This is just two couples. Joseph and Mary, if you want, use that as an example. Although Jesus is an avatar. I won't get into all that. Jesus is an avatar, but not God energy, human energy. Anyway. So you can qualify yourself for a manifestation of God to take birth in your womb. In this lifetime, good luck with that one. But you can certainly begin to qualify yourself in a future lifetime to have that. Okay. So there's Yashoda and Krishna. There's another depiction of Yashoda and Krishna. There's another one of Krishna.
Well-fed one.
I like this one. This is one of my favorites here. Krishna and the calf. Even as a young child, he would look after the calves. Not the big cows, but the calves. Nanda and Yashoda were cowherds. They were Vaishyas. They were farmers. They were not kings and queens. He was the king of the farmers. So they had wealth. But they were farmers.
I'm curious, his tilak, why do they have a half moon going on there too?
Because he comes from the lunar dynasty. Each of the avatars of Vishnu takes birth in a certain planetary dynasty. and Krishna takes birth in the lunar dynasty, the Chandravansh, whereas Ram took birth in the Suryavansh, in the solar dynasty. And Buddha, Lord Buddha, is considered to be an incarnation of Vishnu as well. In the Dashavatar, the 10 avatars of Vishnu, there's Buddha. And Buddha took birth in which dynasty? Which planetary dynasty? The dynasty of Buddha. Who is Buddha? Which planet? Mercury. Mercury is B-U-D-H-A, Buddha. And Buddha is B-U-D-D-H-A. He took birth in the Mercurial dynasty. Lord Nrsingadev, half man, half lion. That's the lion pose in astrology.
In yoga,
in astrology. Yeah, well, how do you know I don't do that pose?
Yeah.
In yoga.
Oh,
it's a yogian slip. Nrsingadev took birth in which dynasty? Any guesses?
Mars
dynasty. Sharp end of the stick. That's Mars. So now, when a child is born in the Vedic culture, on or about the 10th day after the birth, they have the name-giving ceremony, the Namakaran. And this is a sankskara, like a sacrament. Sacrament.
Baptism.
Baptism. Do they give the name at the baptism? No, they already have a name.
No.
They give the name. They won't let him out of the hospital until they give him a name. Some crazy notion.
Yeah.
Or a number.
Yeah, we didn't name. My first wife and I didn't name the first child, so we had to call it like Son Lawrence, Son One Lawrence, something else. Because we wouldn't do it. We wouldn't. They wouldn't force us to do it because we weren't going
to. So you have to have names there.
Yeah, that's what they like, according to records. But you see, you don't give the name until you see the birth chart, so you'll know who you're dealing with. The birth chart will tell you what kind of person this is, and you name the child in accordance with the astrological karma. That's how it's done. Okay? So this is the ceremony they would have had. And then they also bathe the child in different things. Now, there is the priest. The priest is the guy in the saffron. He's Gargamuni. And he's holding the child. That's Nanda there. And the other child is Krishna's older brother Balaram up on the left. So one of the women is Yashoda and the other one is Rohini, Balaram's mother. This is Nanda down on the left. So his Rohini was Vasudev's in prison. That's his other wife. Okay. But she didn't go to prison. But he still had impregnated her. So she would have had a conjugal visitor or something or other. I don't know. So Balaram is Krishna's older brother up there on the left. So that's Krishna that Nanda is handing over to the priest, Gargamuni, who is going to look at his... Oops, I don't have that there. At all those markings that I was showing you earlier on the feet and the hands. Because all of the markings, I should go back to that. Now, they're not in colors like they show them here. They would be like our markings, lines. But this is what you would have to have. This is a little bit iconographic, but this is what you'd have to have on your hands and feet to prove you're a god. So next time you meet somebody that tells you they're God, say,
Sure.
Take your socks off and let's, let's sort this thing out right here, because you know, I want to see the lotus flower, I want to see the umbrella, I want to see the flag, I want to see the elephant goad, I want to see the thunderbolt, I want to see the swastika. Swastika means that which confers auspiciousness. Well, it's the same as the Hitler one, only used for... He stole it. The fish, the half moon, the dhanus, the bow, the shank, the chakra, the triangle, the kamandalu, the water pot, the acorn. So many things are there. So that's how you know. Now, if you want to go home and study your appendages, the more of these you have, the closer to the divine nature you are. I only got one.
What? Shankar? Chakra?
No. I have the fish. That's it.
Your foot?
No, my palms.
How does it look like?
I'll show you later on. Like a one H one. In on the moon mound, which is Pisces, moon in Pisces.
Where would you find something to read your hands and feet?
Sorry?
Where would you find something to do
that for? Oh, in India there's they do it. There's some really, really they don't it's not quite as accurate as Vedic astrology, but they can get it down to the year. They'll tell you every year what's going to happen in your life, the good ones.
I got it done in Bali.
Was it good?
Sorry, tell me where it is in 2 years. It's not as
it's not as much detail usually. So Krishna as a child was a little rascal. He was too intelligent for his own good, and one of the things he loved to do is go steal the butter and the yogurt in his mother's stores. So that's him upsetting a butter pot there, and he would also feed it to his friends and the monkeys. He'd invite the monkeys in. So there he is at it again. There's the monkey. And that's Balaram hiding behind the pillar. And there comes his mother with the stick. Krishna, what are you doing? Now, I have to laugh at this painting. It's a very nice painting, but I have to laugh every time because I was there when that painting was painted. And it was painted by this guy named Parikit. And he had two sons. And those are his sons' faces. I mean, exactly. They are the spitting image of his two sons. So that's what he used, you know. And to paint, they would take photographs of all the different... They'd have people pose. And then they would paint from that. When Krishna was tiny, first of all, Kamsa knew that Krishna was alive. He didn't know who he was exactly. He knew he was a male. He didn't know exactly where he was. Then he got word that Krishna was living over in Gokul in Nandagram, and at the house of some cowherd. So there were some powerful demons that Kamsa engaged to go over, find this kid, and kill him. At all costs, you must kill him. So one of the first ones was a cart demon. It's actually a demon who took the form of a cart and appeared as an inanimate object. And Mother Yashoda had Krishna out in the sunshine and decided to put him in the shade because he had fallen asleep, and put him underneath the cart away to keep him out of the sun. So she set him down there. And Krishna knew exactly that there was a demon in the cart. So he gave it one kick with his little foot that collapsed the cart and killed the demon like that. So because he's God, he did all kinds of wonderful, amazing, miraculous things, even from babyhood. They sent one, I don't have the picture, of Putana, who's this ugly, ugly witch. And Kansa said, you go over and you breastfeed him and you kill him. So she went over and she, instead of being her usual ugly self, she transformed herself into an absolutely stunning woman. And apparently you could go in and offer to breastfeed somebody's child. It was done. It was the done thing. Can I breastfeed him? Oh, yes, yes, go ahead. Yeah, well, but this is just a stranger walking in the door. This is not a wet nurse. She was extremely beautiful. And everybody went, oh, wow, who's she, I wonder. Because they also knew that some of the gods would come in human form just to see him. They knew that. So they weren't sure who she was. Well, yeah, you could breastfeed him. It's okay. And she smeared her nipple with poison. That's what she did. So he'd breastfeed, he'd be finished, Kansa would be happy. And of course Krishna knew what was going on. She took him up in her lap, she began to breastfeed him. She took him outside of the house. And she was breastfeeding him and acting, you know, like women act with babies, so it all seemed very normal. And then Krishna sucked the life force right out of her. And she fell dead on the ground. And she returned to her ugly witch form. And the soul left her body. You could see this little sparkling soul. And it entered the body of Krishna. Because all souls go back to God. In this sense, these souls did not go to hell. She did not go to hell. Because she technically offered service to God. Even if it was impure service. So all the demons that were killed by the hand of God got Brahman liberation. They became liberated from repeated birth and death. But they went into the energy, the Brahma Jyoti. So they merged into that spiritual sky. If you're killed by God, it's a special favor. So this was Trinavarta, the whirlwind demon, who took the form of a whirlwind. And he came and like a tornado, and he swept Krishna up, and he was going to carry him off and dash him. You can see, I don't know if you can see in this picture, there, down, way down on the right, you can see a building. I mean, he had him way up in the air. He's just going to throw him down, let him die. But Krishna choked the life out of him and landed safely. So that's another one.
All these demons are like friends of him.
Friends of the Kansa. Yeah, Kansa has sent them all to kill him off.
How could like a human being how would he communicate?
Oh, they were just, you know, people that were available to him because he was a demoniac guy. He was a human being, but he was, you know, it's like how do criminals find murder for hire guys? They do. You know, like attracts like. So.
I think what he's getting at is the fact that in the different yugas, the beings that are here have different abilities. And obviously in this...
Is that what you mean?
We've got the least amount of abilities than we would have had.
This was a former yuga, so you still had some amazing... A lot of... And this was a yuga where the gods were still coming down to earth. So you had powerful gods and powerful demons still coming to earth. And have you ever read that Chariot of Gods? We talked about that one, didn't we?
Yeah.
Eric von Däniken.
Oh, yes.
You know, and he gives all kinds of instances of evidence of the gods used to come down regularly, but no more. But back in this is the former Yuga.
So this isn't just people walking around.
No, it's not just people walking around, especially when God's there. Now, it's not like everybody looked at Krishna and knew he was God. They wouldn't have. Some would, some wouldn't. Depends. Most wouldn't. A lot of them would just look at him like he's like this amazingly beautiful person, you know, but not really understand. Some of them would look at him with envy. Some would look at him with hatred. They all had different takes on it. So Krishna was sitting down and he was eating dirt on one occasion, as children do. He was eating dirt. And Mother Yashoda says, Krishna, do not eat dirt. It's dirty. Don't do it. Oh, no, Mother, I wasn't eating dirt. Your brother said you were eating dirt. Oh, I wasn't eating dirt, Mother. That's not right. So she says, come here and let me see inside your mouth. So there he is. He opens his mouth and she sees the entire cosmic manifestation in his mouth. That's why they're showing a picture of everything around it up top there. But that's what she was seeing inside of his mouth. The whole cosmos. She's like, scrambled her brains. And she's wiping his face. Okay, go play. That's another one of his little leelas. And then, one time he did what he always did, steal the butter. So she chased him around and the courtyard until she caught him. Of course, until he let her catch him. And then she decided she would tie him to the mortar. This is like a mortar and pestle. It's the mortar. And she tied the rope around to tie him so she could keep an eye on him. He wouldn't run around and steal the butter. But the rope kept coming up short every time. Then she'd go and she'd tie another piece of rope to the rope, as you see the knot, and she'd tie it around again, and it'd still be this much too short. And this went on and on and on. She had gotten every piece of rope in the house, and it was still too short. So he's just looking at her, you know, innocent like a child. And finally, he's, okay, I feel sorry for her, you know. I'll let her tie me up, type of thing. So finally, she was able to tie him.
Damodar.
His name is Damodara. That means rope around the waist, tied around the waist. That's a very famous name of Krishna, Damodar. Damodara. Well, in English we say Damodar, but the proper pronunciation is Damodara. So she ties him to a mortar. So then he decides he's going to go for a bit of a wander on his knees, dragging the mortar behind him. And he drags the mortar out into the forested area between two trees. And the mortar, of course, gets stuck between these two trees that are very close together. The mortar's this way, and he goes through, but the mortar gets stuck behind him with the rope. So he, like this, until, boom, the trees come down. And who appears but Nalakuvara and Manigriva? These were two demigods or devas imprisoned in the trees for not showing proper respect, I think, to Narada. And they were cavorting and carrying on naked in a lake, and some sage came by and they didn't see fit to cover themselves and act in a respectful manner. So the sage cursed them to be locked in trees and live there indefinitely until God himself came and liberated them. Well, That's what happened. And this is them saying thank you so much, because the tree body isn't all what it's cracked up to be. And now we can return to the Svarga Loka, to the spiritual world. And they're very grateful. That is a really nice painting of Krishna, I think. Mm-hmm. Now, Krishna, this was a lady who was a fruit seller, and she'd come, you know, they come like daily. We were just in Bengal, in Mayapur, and we were staying in, somebody gave us an apartment to stay in for a while. It was quite nice. Every day, services, the vendors would come to your house and knock on the door. If you want milk, you want milk, and it's fresh from the cow. This is no processed milk, it's straight from the cow. You know, but you have to boil it a little.
He's got milk churns strapped to either side of the back of his bicycle.
His bicycle.
So he just put a jug in and pour it into whatever container.
Whatever container you give him.
Well,
what did we pay?
20p or something.
Yeah, it was
10-15 cents for a liter.
Per liter of milk right from the teat. You know, can't beat it.
It's true, but even there in London, some of the friend I was staying, she get this actually raw milk.
Yeah, raw milk.
It's not pasteurized.
Right. So here would be the fruit vendor. So he'd see her regularly. So he comes out, the little child, and he's got some grains of rice in his hand, and he goes, here, this is, you know, this is payment for some fruit. She looks at the rice, you know. Okay, here, take this. She's giving the fruit happily to him because he's so attractive, and she can't resist, she can't say no. And he takes as much fruit as he can carry, and he turns around and he goes back to his house. And then she looks down into her basket, and it has been turned into valuable jewels and gems. So that was the payment she received. That's what Krishna gave her. That's a lovely painting there. The dappled light is really nice. Here's another demon, Agasura. This was a demon that seemed like a cave. The coward boys all thought it was a cave. Well, Krishna didn't think it was a cave. And they all ran in. Come on, let's go play in the cave. I've never seen this cave before. Me neither, but let's go play. So off they went, running in the cave. Come on, Krishna, let's go to the cave. And they all got swallowed by this big reptilian guy. So Krishna had to go into the cave and sort of create tremendous indigestion in the belly of the demon, and whereby he opened his mouth and all the coward boys ran out, and of course that's what killed him, because Krishna was in his belly. And that was the end of that one. Now Brahma, that's Brahma, the creator, as we've seen a little bit earlier. Now, as I told you, the gods know that there's going to be an avatar, but they're not sure who it is. And Brahma's wondering, who's this little blue boy killing these demons? Who is this guy? He doesn't know for sure who it is. So he decides that he's going to kidnap all the cows and the cowherd boys. So every morning Krishna would take the calves out to the pasturing ground with all his friends. They were just small, maybe 5 years old. They're allowed to take them out, just the calves. And so Brahma, well, Krishna is busy doing something. He walked away to get something. I don't remember. He comes back, and all the boys and the calves are gone. So Brahma had come and kidnapped all of them. But Brahma thought, I'm only going to take them for a moment, just to see what this guy will do. Well, that's a moment in Brahma's time, not in our time. So that moment in Brahma's time was a year in our time. So Krishna manifested himself in the forms of all these boys and calves, and sustained that for an entire year. In fact, that when they go home each night and their parents would greet the boys, the parents couldn't, none of them could figure out why they were so attracted to their child, more so than ever before. Because Krishna was the one that everybody was attracted to more than anyone in that village. Because he's God. He's all attractive. He's irresistible. So this is Brahma realizing that it's Krishna that he's trying to hoodwink, trying to trick. And he feels remorse for testing him. I'm really sorry I did that. I didn't know it was you. I was trying to figure out who you were. And Krishna says, it's okay. It's all right. What he didn't tell him at this point is he's going to take a human birth in his next lifetime, and that'll set him straight, because that's what happened. Much lower birth.
Brahma.
You don't test God.
He's ruined the universe, not Brahma's.
No, then there will be a different Brahma. Brahma is a position, just like the Prime Minister or the Taoiseach. It's a position. And Brahma is not Vishnu Tattva, it's not God energy, it's Jiva Tattva. You can be Brahma if you qualify yourself. So it's a regular soul can take that position. You can be promoted to that. And then if you want to create something, well, yeah, create to your heart's content. Brahma sometimes becomes illusioned by his own creation. There are stories of that too. Anyway, he's remorseful here, and Krishna forgives him and says, don't worry about it, just try not to do it again, okay? Here's another demon called Dhenukasura, horse demon. And he kills him off. He grabs him by the tail and throws him like 10 miles away. So there's Krishna in the idyllic rural area in which he lived. And he plays flute. And his flute was absolutely irresistible. All the animals would come. The sound of the flute is completely captivating. If only we could hear even a couple of notes, what that must be like. So these are just different depictions. There's Krishna and Balaram, his older brother, who's whitish skin. Now his brother is actually Sheshanaga. He is the serpent couch, serpent energy. So they have different functions at different times in different leelas. And there is Krishna and Balaram again. This is them out, you know, looking after the cows in the forest. And here they're having lunch with all the cow boys. Now, if you're attracted to that, you can become one of these guys. Hang out with God as his friend. Another picture of that. Then there was a big multi-headed serpent called Kaliya. He came into the Yamuna River. He was poisonous, and he poisoned all the water. And the cows started to die. Anybody who went into the water was dropping dead from poison. And Krishna went and danced on his hoods. It's very famous. And he was going to kill him off, but then the Naga Patnis, the wives of the Naga, came and said, please, please don't kill our husband. We know he's not a very good guy. He's full of poison. Krishna says, okay, I'm going to spare him only because of your intercession, but he must go very far away from here and not come back. So Kali agreed. They all went away. The poison was expunged from the water, and those who were killed were brought back to life. There's another nice painting of Kaliya. It's called Kaliya Krishna. Krishna dancing on Kaliya. This is my absolute favorite of all. This painting of Krishna. Gopal Krishna, protector of the cows. The cow is so important and so sacred in India because the cow is a symbol for the mother. The cow's mother. The cow gives milk, which sustains the baby after finishing with its mother's milk. The cow gives ghee, which is very healing and is used in any one of a number of ways in Ayurvedic preparation and yogurt.
Clarified butter.
Yeah, clarified butter. And also the cow's urine and stool are antiseptic. And they are used also in healing preparations, medicines. You can take, if you have an open cut, you can take cow stool, cow urine, and rub it on. Now, these cows here that are shot full of drugs and antibiotics, etc. No, I'm not sure about that. Okay? But a cow in its natural state. Some people say, yeah, well, milk's not good for you and this and that. Well, the milk and the cows and all the rest of that we are subject to is subject to so much government regulation and manipulation that you're not really getting what would have been available 5,000 years ago or what we just had in April in Mayapur. But even in Mayapur, we had to boil the milk because it's India. It's got bugs or, you know, bacteria. So another depiction. Now, this is a very famous painting of, well, not this painting so much, but the pastime of Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill. The Gaurav men were going to do a big fire, big sacrifice on behalf of Indra, the rain god, king of the gods, because he sends rain, and farmers and dairy cow herds need rain to, you know, grow their grain, etc., etc. So we better worship him or we won't get rain. Krishna says, no, you don't need to worship him. You just worship God and worship Govardhan Hill, because on Govardhan Hill is the grass. On Govardhan Hill is the water. And that's where the cows graze. So he was saying, worship Govardhan Hill. So they did this instead of worshiping Indra. So Indra became very angry. And he brought the Samvartaka cloud, which is the cloud they use at the devastation of the universe when everything is dissolved and wrapped up. You know, when the great flood comes, it's the Samvartaka cloud that is raining down. So, and this went on for what I think 7 days, 7 nights. Mm-hmm. And Krishna went underneath Govardhan Hill and picked it up in the pinky finger of his left hand and held it up like an umbrella and restored and comfort, and life went on underneath the hill. So there are different depictions of that. Sometimes they put up their sticks thinking that Krishna might not be able to hold the hill, so they, we better help them put our sticks up. So there is, again, there's many, many depictions of that. We have one here, too, on the wall. Now, that is modern-day Govardhan Hill. It's much, much smaller than it used to be. But as you can see,
I think that everyone's gone there over the last 2,000 years to take the feast of Alma.
Yeah, you're not supposed to. It's a sacred place. You're supposed to circumambulate it, walk around it. So there's the cows up there grazing on the Govardhan Hill.
So what was the lesson behind that he left with this?
The lesson is you don't need to worship demigods and devas. You worship God, and everything will be given to you. That's the lesson.
Yeah, but that's, sometimes the people, especially Muslim people, ask me, "Oh, you have so many." I say, "Yeah, because we love the nature. We see God in everything." Yeah. And I said, but of course, we just only worship one God.
Yeah.
This was the lesson. He said that when the villagers, they're actually worshipping the rain God and this and that, the Krishna gave them lessons. It's not about, it's just like, you need to worship just only one God.
Correct.
But rather than this, that, yes, of course, you give them respect, you give them pranama. And then again, when Indra tried to punish them, the rain God, this villager, but he couldn't do it. In the end, he came to Earth. Who's this guy? And he found that's the God himself. So he said that your duty is as a demigod, like about rain or whatever, that's your duty. But you shouldn't be worshipped.
Yeah.
And then, well, for the lesson.
Yeah, you can worship God and all things will be added unto you. You don't have to worship these lesser gods. So Indra actually appeared and he was remorseful, like Brahma in the earlier scene. So the main thing, Krishna's pastimes with the gopis, the Gaur girls, who had more of a conjugal interest in Krishna, and they wanted to be his lovers.
Groupies.
So there are many, as you've seen through the years, many depictions of that. And the number one among them is Radha. She's the queen of Vrindavan.
A female version of the god.
Mm-hmm. And most of their pastimes would take place by the moonlight at night. They'd scamper out of their beds and they'd go and meet at night time.
Didn't they not sleep?
No, but they wouldn't need a lot of sleep.
Party. God, no, they need a lot of sleep. Good party.
Good party. Night to party. He liked to party. Mind you, gotta remember, he was only like 10 years old at the time.
Who doesn't want to have a party with God?
Yeah. The gopis absolutely were hopelessly in love with him. But so was everybody in different rasas. The gopis wanted to be his lover. Then all of the coward men and women wanted to be a parental figure to him. And then all of the people his age, the boys, wanted to be his pal, his friend. And then there were also servants that were there, so they wanted to serve. So the different rasas or relationships that one could have, they were all being played out, but with God directly. So everybody was completely happy and satisfied that, you know, most of them did not realize he was God. They were kept from really knowing that. He just was pretending to be. I don't know how you can pretend to be an ordinary guy with all that stuff going on around you. You know. By the way, Kamsa, when he found out that Krishna was alive and living in Nandagram, he sent out an edict to have all the firstborn male children killed off of all the families. Have you heard that one before?
Yeah.
Yeah. So then his guards went and tried to kill off all the firstborn.
So why is it that you heard that?
Because many of these things you find in the Bible.
Christians.
So the Bible has got these from the Vedic culture. I mean, this predates the Bible by 3,000 years, so go figure it out. I should say it predates Jesus Christ. So, this is very famous. The Rasa dance was essentially by the moonlight. It doesn't look like moonlight here, but... Now, what was amazing about the Rasa dance, not only that it was a dance festival, and there were a lot of really, really amazing musicians that came for this, which are not shown here. Krishna danced with each and every one of the gopis personally. How? One at a time? No. He expanded himself into as many forms as there were gopis. So each girl had him to herself. And they danced in this, more or less, in the circle of the Rasa dance. And the descriptions of the dancing that went on are just amazing. These were the best dancers within and without of the universe. Just amazing, amazing dancing. And it was, you know, it's like going to a concert where the performer keeps blowing your mind over and over and over again. They blow your mind and you go, oh my God. But then they go and do something even beyond that. And then they do something beyond that. And it keeps going like this. So there's no limit. When you're dealing with the spiritual realm, there's no limit. It just keeps expanding. Good to bear in mind. That's another depiction of Rasa dance. There you see the demigods on their airplanes, their flying machines. Hovering above, watching. They came to see. Because they knew who he was. Or at least some of them did, you know. Let's see what he's up to. And then he would disappear. A love for God is the highest rasa, or the highest experience. But love in separation is said to be higher. Why? If you have somebody that you're absolutely in love with, your lover, and you're together, it's intense love. But when he goes away, it's way more intense. Because you don't have him there. He's gone. And Krishna would do this. He just all of a sudden disappear. Oh, where is he? I don't know. He was here a minute ago. Have you seen him? No. Did you see him? Let's go find him. And they were beside themselves with separation from Krishna. It's called viparlamba. Love in separation. It's far, far more intense. Now you could say, yeah, but it doesn't feel as good. No, but it's more intense.
No, it feels like abandonment.
Feels like abandonment.
There's an old poetry yesterday. Jo maza intazari yaar ne hai, wo maza izhari. Izhari pyaar ne nahi hai. You see that the maza is just like the bliss, like, and yaar just like your loved one, beloved, like. Intazar, it's just the waiting, and he said the excitement and whatever, like
anticipation.
Yeah, you have in waiting.
Anticipation.
Like waiting, right?
Yeah.
Waiting for the loved one coming down. Sometimes he's so happy, soon. It's not sometimes the way he's with there because he's
yeah.
there.
The anticipation is far more intense.
That,
yeah. yeah. I can't wait to see him. I'm going to see him. And then you see him. It's not even as good as it was when the anticipation. It's good, but... So now... I think it was about 12 years old. This is Krishna supposed to be at 12 years old.
He's been working
out. Yeah. In Mathura, which was the nearby city where Kamsa lived, That city is still there, Mathura. Kamsa had tried all these things to kill this guy off. They just didn't work. All these demons, none of them were coming back. They come back in body bags. He's running out of demons. He's simply running out. So he says, what am I going to do? I know. We'll have a contest. And we'll invite people from miles around to come, and we'll have a big festival and a contest. We'll have a wrestling contest. And we'll invite them, Krishna and Balaram, specifically to come to the city, to this wrestling competition. And because it's a personal invitation. So it was time. And that's Krishna heading off to Mathura. Balaram's actually with him there someplace. You can't see it in the picture. Now everybody, you see all the people way in the back, everybody in Vrindavan where they were living came out. Vrindavan, Nandagram, they came because Krishna was going away. Krishna said, don't worry, I'll be back soon. Because Krishna knew he had to go and kill, it was time to kill Kamsa. It was time to go and do what he was supposed to do. It was the time. And so he assured them all that he'd be back shortly, as soon as he sorted out the situation. He never returned to Vrindavan for the rest of his lifetime, because that Leela was finished. Because once he went into Mathura in the city, from that point forward, he resumed his kingly nature, the family he'd been born into, the princely, kingly, rulership family that he had been born into, that began. That was reinstated. So the coward boy running around herding cows, that was finished from age 12. Now, he may have known that, but they didn't know that, so they thought he was coming back. Their lives from that point forward were empty, because the love of their life never returned. All they had was their memories. So talk about love and separation. It was intense for them. So this is them all saying goodbye to him as he leaves. Finally, he drives away in the chariot or in the cart. It looks like a chariot. And this is what happens. The gopis go through a kind of madness, looking for him everywhere and cursing the bumblebee who makes them think of him but they don't deliver, and cursing flowers and different things that remind them of Krishna, but Krishna's no longer there. So this is a kind of a madness period that they go through. So here's Krishna arriving in Mathura, in the city, to go for the contest. So one of the first things that happens in the contest is they unleash this beast of an elephant to tromp him, to trample him and turn him into pulp. Well, you know what happens to the demons around this guy. Yeah, so that elephant is dispatched very, very quickly. And then the contest begins, the wrestling, and there's Balaram. Now, these are professional wrestlers. That's what they do. Fighting 12-year-old boys, 12-year-old, 13-year-old boy. I mean, hello. But anyway, there they are. There's another example of it. Somebody had a bow that they broke. And Krishna and Balaram kill these guys off in no time. And then they went to Kamsa was sitting up on the big dais. They went up and grabbed him and, what did they do? Choke him or something?
Yeah.
Choked the life force out of him. That was it. So they did what they came to do. By that time, his parents had been put back into prison, so I released the parents, restored the rightful king to the throne, and brought peace.
You're quite a prayer for getting into fights, aren't they?
Yeah.
No, he put his grandfather into the throne.
Ugra Singh. Yeah, well, Krishna was a warrior prince and dealing with warriors, whereas Chaitanya was a Brahmin and his mandate was preaching love of God. His weapon was love, holy names, that was his weapon. This is modern-day Dwarka, where Krishna built his city off the west coast of India. And the city is no longer there, it's underneath the sea, and the archaeological remnants are there. They found them.
This could be over 10,000 years. This is described. Han Cook or something. It's very much into archaeology.
I saw something on the television a while ago of them excavating.
That was more discovered. And it's just one temple over another, of the centuries. So.
That temple you see there on the right is a really, really beautiful temple. Kalindi and I were there. And they treated us like, I mean, they treated us wonderfully there. Really, really nice. This is in Gujarat. The Gujarati people are all vegetarian, pretty much. They're all vegetarian. They're all...
You're not allowed to slaughter cows in Gujarat.
No. But it's a very high population of Muslims in Gujarat as well.
In like
Ahmedabad.
Mostly the Hindus.
Yeah. Ahmedabad. I mean, that's such a nice place. You have to go to Ahmedabad to get to Dwarka. Anyway. Here is Krishna in an assembly. There was a Rajasuya sacrifice, and Krishna was the honored guest in the assembly. He was made given the honored seat. So that's what his life became. It became somebody who was dealing with kingdoms and kings and government, and that was how his life was lived from age of 12. He lived for, 125 years, I believe. And then, of course, the famous Bhagavad Gita. So that was, we talked about it last time, the inevitable battle that had to be fought on religious principles, on Dharma. And there is Arjuna asking Krishna to draw the chariot between the two armies. I want to see who's come to fight. Same one again. And Arjuna loses heart because he sees his relatives on the other side. He decides he shouldn't fight because he's killing off his loved ones. It's really Krishna putting him under illusion so he could speak the Bhagavad Gita. That was the whole idea. Bhagavad Gita is the science of yoga. So another depiction of the same thing. And Krishna begins to explain.
So if he hadn't been under that duress, God may not have appeared to him.
Well, no, God appeared to him, and God had already agreed. Krishna had agreed to drive his chariot. That was already prearranged. But they had to put Arjuna under illusion. Because Arjuna spent his lifetime as a warrior, and the best warrior on the planet at the time. So he had actually fought battles against these same people in the past. You know, so it's like, why? And when you're reading, you're like, why is he, all of a sudden he can't fight? You know, all of a sudden it's wrong to fight. That was done intentionally. So Krishna would speak to Bhagavad Gita, and the rest of us could benefit. Because that is of Krishna's appearance.
But look, he did fight against them, but this time he never killed them.
This time he'd have to kill them, correct. But this is the essence of what Krishna left behind. I mean, everything you could read about it is of value, but the Bhagavad Gita is beyond.
Yeah.
So this is a very famous universal form, the Vishvarupa. When Krishna says, when he says, well, let me show you who I really am. You think I'm your cousin. Let me show you who I am. And all of a sudden, this world, the ground, the sky, the trees, the war, it all disappears. And everywhere you look, 360 degrees, is what you're seeing there. And it's huge. It's everywhere. So you don't even know that you're standing. And this is the universal form, all-consuming. And one of the things he sees is all the warriors. You can see there in the, right in the middle of the picture, all the warriors are going into the fire. And that one, Deva's mouth, he's burning them all, scorching them all. In other words, he's killing them all. So he sees the outcome of the battle is shown to him. But it's very scary for Arjuna to see this form. There's another depiction of it. Jimi Hendrix took to it and decided to put his own face right in the middle of that on the Axis Bold of Love album. That's the first time I ever saw it in my life. And the Jimi Hendrix, I thought, this is an amazing picture. Where does this come from? And Jimi Hendrix, the guitar player, he was right in the middle.
No. Actually, from Third World.
Jimi Hendrix was to the guitar as Krishna was to the flute, so
you know, he's how much in Bollywood superstar.
Who? Amitabh Bachchan. I know who he is.
What, Indian boy though?
No, he's an actor.
He's a Bollywood actor.
Here's another depiction of the universal form. You've seen this. You know, but everything would be filled with it. Every place in the sky and below. So one of the last verses in the Bhagavad Gita is this one. Wherever there is Krishna, the master of all mystics, and wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, there will also certainly be opulence, victory, extraordinary power, and virtue. So I think it's a wonderful metaphor, because if you can actually see God driving your chariot and have a relationship with God in that way, that God's driving your chariot, you're making the decisions, but he's doing the driving, he's helping you. This will be the result, as stated.
If your life is steered by God.
If your life is steered by God. So this is my guru, Prabhupada, who probably single-handedly did more to spread teachings of the Bhagavad Gita and consciousness of Krishna than any modern day soul. And I'm one of the very few that actually got direct initiation from him. And the mantra.
What does the Hari mean?
Hare is the divine feminine. Hara. Hara is feminine. So it's the divine feminine energy. All energy of God is Shakti, is female. So, Hara Shakti. When you say Hare, you go, oh, Hara.
And did you say Rama is the male energy?
Rama is male energy. Rama is spiritual bliss. And Rama or Balaram, his brother, is the instructional energy of God, the guru energy, the teaching.
Hare Krishna mantra, like male, female.
Yeah.
It's both. It's
both. So like the way the people ask, why we have Allah, we have Jesus, we have this, why you have like a female with them? It's just like there is Lakshmi, there's a Vishnu, there's a Rama, there's a Sita. It's just like in Hinduism and in the yoga, you always have, there's a, one is a female and one is a male energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's how even like physiologically we see that as well. We have like a estrogen, calcium, medical.
Okay, we'll end it up with a little Harinam. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you
for coming. Friday is Krishna's birthday, so.
Any suggestions? What are we doing Friday?
Hmm?
Should we do anything on Friday? Is there anything to do?
Yeah.